The method.
Ideas. Method became
unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
Without doubt. Do you call it unsound method?
I don't see any method at all.
Hello and welcome to episode 21 of Unsound Methods with me, Jamie Batchin.
And me, Lachlan Bloom.
If this is your first time joining us, this is a podcast where we speak to other writers of literary fiction about their craft, technique and approach to writing.
And in this episode, we speak to the French writer Matthias Henard. We had a wide-ranging chat in July last year, I think. Covering quite a few of his motivations for writing and also some of the comforts that help him get in the zone, feeling having a good pair of slippers to hand or to foot, and having a Spanish keyboard to have the widest range of possible key combinations. We also talked about the need to get away from our academy mentality of writing and to be free as a writer when approaching a fiction project.
We spoke to Matthias while he was promoting his latest novel, Tell Them of Battles, Kings and Elephants, which is out now on Fitzcarraldo Editions, along with a lot of his other previous novels, which are with Fitzcarraldo in translation. They include Zone, Compass and Street of Thieves. Well, ladies and gents, Matthias Henard.
So thank you for joining us.
I thank you for the invitation.
In your quite packed schedule, I think, while you're over here just for a few days. I thought we could start by asking you if you have a particular routine when you're writing.
I think I don't really. I usually write early in the morning. And it's better if it's in the same place for like 2, 3, 4 weeks or month, just to get used to the place you're working in. And then I used to have a pair of slippers that I really liked, but they are dead now, so I don't use them anymore. So I think I don't have. I enjoy writing with a Spanish keyboard.
Uh-huh.
I'm used to, because you can't write in any language outside Spanish. I mean, you can write in French, or you have all the accents you need and things like that. But no, I think that's all. I don't have no other strange things or magic formulas or things like that. No, I sit and write basically, but quite early in the morning indeed, like between 5 and 6.
Right. Yes. Very early.
And when you sort of get to your desk, do you sort of start writing straight away, or is there
you have
a process to get into the
start
writing?
Start the computer, and then you wait. I wait till it's ready. So I usually go to my desk, put the computer on, then go to the kitchen, grab coffee, and then read the last page or the few last pages I was writing the day before, just to get into the mood, and then I get started. Nothing special. I think every writer does the same. So I imagine maybe people have strange things say, like utter formulas and stuff. No, I don't.
And what sort of process do you go through with a project? How much planning do you do before you sit down and start the actual writing?
It depends on the project. You have many. For me, every book is a different adventure. But nonetheless, there are many things in common. Like, I plan a lot. I write plans and with chapters, characters, background. And usually I start writing the end. That's the first thing I write. That doesn't mean that the end will remain the same, but it's usually the first thing I write. Then I basically, normally when I start writing, the whole book is planned and I know almost everything. Something can change. When you write, you realize that something is not right, or you need some information you lack, or something like that. But basically, when I start a project, it's almost, let's say, ready to be written. And I don't usually do research while I'm writing.
So that's all done beforehand. And what sort of shape is that? Is that plan? Is it?
That depends on the book. For example, when I wrote a huge novel called Zone, I remember I had a lot of post-its on the wall, like here, more or less. And it was, I was writing in an artist studio at that time, because he was basically I was writing during the day because he was working at night. So, and that worked pretty well. And I had the whole wall, full of post-its, like there were like 200, something like that. And the problem was that I couldn't write anywhere else. So I was stuck in this studio for like a year and a half. But that was great because the different colors of the post-its were showing different times in history. You know, yellow was for the end of the 20th century, and red was for the 19th century, and so on. And also you had columns for characters. So you really had like the whole novel and in a blink. That was quite
methodical.
Yes,
then.
Yes, it's very, it was very interesting.
And is each post-it note in that, for that novel, was each post-it note a sort of bullet point of just to remind you of what you wanted to say about it?
Yes, it was, each post-it was an episode. Like, let's say a chapter, but not an entire chapter, let's say 2-3 pages. And, so you had the whole novel. You could really balance, you know, between, time and place and characters and stuff. So it was really interesting. But then the problem was that the post-its at the end were falling from because they were old, and so and you couldn't move, and that was the problem. So for the next book, Compass, which was also big research, I use another technique, which I had like on paper, basically like a plan on paper and chapters, let's say a big folio for each chapter.
And did you feel any sort of intellectual difference with interacting with it, either being up on the wall where you could see it, or having
The end remains the same, you have to write it anyway. So you can find many things to kind of diversion if you want to, but at the end you have to write it.
So it can be a displacement activity, putting things up on a wall and getting an auditor.
How long does that, I guess that it could vary quite a lot, but how long does that period of research and planning?
It depends on the book too. You know, there are books that are very long and difficult to research. Zone was very long and difficult to research. I had to travel a lot, make a lot of interviews with soldiers and ex-fighters from many wars and stuff like that. It took a long time to research. But other books, even if they're, I don't know, very short ones, have also lots of hours of reading behind them. Like the last one, who just appeared now here in the UK, Tell Them of Battles, Kings and Elephants. It's only 130 pages, something like that, 150. But it was also like 1 or 2 years full-time research about the Ottoman Empire at that time, 1506. And so even if it's, you might say, well, you might just have imagined that. And I probably could, but I don't know. I need, you know, research is sometime a way of being more, I don't know, sure of yourself, you know, like you rely on research. You say, that's fully researched. But then at the end, what is important is the way you write it, not how many hours you've researched for it.
And how do you, I guess I've got two questions on the sort of transition period. Like when do you think, okay, this is a project I'm going to dive into and start researching? And when do you think, okay, I've done enough research, I need to start writing the book itself?
Basically when I've filled my plan, so to say, that when I know what the book will be like, I have like an image in my head. And
can you see that approaching? Do you know?
Yes, of course.
Okay, by next week, I think I'll be ready, or is it just one day
you wake up? No, it's not a question of days or weeks, but it's more like a month or thing.
Yeah, you see it coming ahead. Like, yes. I'm about ready to.
Yes, I'm about it. And then you begin to write the first pages, like I told you before, the end, for example, or a special moment in the book. You know, you already have an image or a couple of sentences. So you begin to write small things while you plan the whole novel. Then you begin really, you jump into it.
Yeah. And going back to the original impetus, how do you know, or what point do you think this is going to be a novel, before you've done any research?
You're not sure until the end that it would be a novel, you know. It hasn't happened to me yet, but some books might collapse in the process or fall apart, or you just decide that that won't be a good book and though you leave it. So it can always change until publication, you know, you never know. But I have always many, many ideas and projects, and I work on them at the same time. Two, three, four future books. And then one I don't know why at times it's just like, oh, this one, and makes it before the others, you know. It's like, oh,
some fights to the front.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Finds its way up.
Do you find that there's a big change in the direction? Like the most recent book, you researched the Ottoman Empire. Is that what you started researching, or did you start on a completely different topic and find yourself there?
There are times, you know, every book is different, but this book was really a moment when I was living in Rome, and that's really interesting because I was writing another book, Zone, at that time, and accidentally in the library I wanted to read anything just to change my mind of warfare and soldiers. And I picked up Giorgio Vasari's biography of Michelangelo. And I just began reading it. And I got fascinated by one sentence in it that said, and at that time, Michelangelo received an invitation from the Sultan of Istanbul to go to Constantinople. And I said, what? Michelangelo in Istanbul. And I was fascinated. But to do what, you know? Because 1506 Michelangelo is nobody. And so I was amazed. Why would the Sultan Bayezid invite Michelangelo to his capital, a young Italian artist, unknown there? And so I began researching. That was the starting point. Really, this novel has a real physical starting point. I can't remember. The others don't. For example, it's really tough to remember when started this or that book. But this one is really a concrete moment, precise.
And from that moment, did you then sort of take notes in a notebook or save a file on your computer?
No, I see a notebook there, and I used the same at that time. So it was just like taking notes, biographies, historical works, and taking notes and getting a bit aware of what was living, creating at that time, traveling, and it's the whole world. So you know, it's many things you have to research that until you get down to food, for example. Now, how would, if Michelangelo went to Constantinople, what would he eat at that time? No questions like that.
And there's sort of lists of it looks like kind of merchants ship's manifests or something within the book. Yes. Is that that's a sort of raw material that you managed to find?
Yes, and then you make it a little more practical than it is at the beginning. You choose the material not to traditionate history, but to make it also literary, you know, and beautiful.
And do you
but
have?
Yes, it's true that it's a lot of lists, because, you know, Michelangelo himself was fond of lists, and we have a lot of lists of grocery store, for example, from the 16th century from Michelangelo himself, you know, with drawings or without and things. So, and he was very systematic. So it's really interesting that to write about such a character using yourself lists of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's quite an interesting, in the book, it's quite an interesting sort of contrast, I guess. There's a sort of mundanity to lists and sort of the everyday, and yet Michelangelo, his work is sort of ethereal and sort of beyond this world.
Yes, but at the end, if you think about it, Michelangelo is the most concrete character ever, the most, is really, really real, and his lists reflect that, you know. It's very, very strong body on earth.
Is that kind of building from the real into something beyond,
yes,
as well, that is
probably
in his work and in the book as well, I think.
It's something that comes out of his biographies and what the historians have written about him. He was like that. Yeah.
And with your sort of other work, it seems that sort of geography and history are sort of very important in your work. Do you tend to start with having an interest in a location or a sort of current of history, and then a narrative comes from that? Or do you have an idea about a narrative and just happens to attach itself to places?
No, usually it's really related to a place. I think if I hadn't been fascinated with Istanbul, for example, that quote in Michelangelo's biography, I wouldn't have even noticed it, you know. I would just have skipped. But it's always the place, and there are places like that that for me are magical and that are really, really important for fiction too. You know? And Istanbul is a great place for fiction, as is Rome, for example, or London or Paris. Well, but for me, the Middle East is always something very, very familiar and very important in my life and in my writing.
And have you been led to any places because you took the opportunity, you found it an interesting sounding place you hadn't been to and thought, well, I can go there as part of research and experience? Or have you always... They're always
of course, all the time, you know, up to the Balkans, for example. I went to places I couldn't have imagined 10 years before that I would ever visit, in the south of Serbia to meet an old general retired and had been in the Balkan War, or in Bosnia in a small village to talk to a fighter, a German fighter who settled there in 95. But you, it's also the research is leading you to some place. You, at times you don't know where. Of course, it's all more or less controlled in the same region, but that's really the book. And the idea you have of the characters of your novel. You know, because you always have, I always have like a kind of image, of dream of a book. Before even starting to plan it or research it or write it. And it's this image that is guiding you to some places or some books or, even some moments. And then this image is very blurred at the beginning. You don't really see things, but then it's getting sharper and sharper till the end.
And do you find that helps with this sort of editing process? That seems like the sort of image that would let you know whether the integrity of something works or not. You know, when you just discard things because that's no, it's
Discuss the, well, you have to discuss things. That's true. It's always difficult for me. At times you have the feeling that writing is not like painting. It's more like a sculpture. You have all the matter is there, and then you carve out the figure out of it.
Once you have the research,
yes, out of the information, out all the reality, for example, you have around you, then you can carve out the figures of a character or something, you know. But it's always discarding. Meanwhile, in painting, it's the other way around. You have nothing, and it appears like this.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying the show. If you have a moment, please do rate the podcast. How do you see the sort of balancing between the truth of the research or the reality that you uncover through your research and the sort of truth within the fiction? Are those always
But it has nothing to do, of course, you know, there's no truth, it's only words. And there's no reality at all, it's only words, so... I think.
Do you have decisions though, where you research something and you know what happened as has been told by witnesses, and you have a different interpretation that you want to write, a fiction that you want to create, and you have a choice between creating a fictional sequence of events as to what happened and using the actual events that you've researched? Is that a decision you ever come across, or
no?
You tend to stick closely to the research.
Yes, you can. Well, there are two things. You know, when you research something, it's because you need historical data or geographical or something that comes out of reality. So, if I need that, that means I won't go too far away from that because I needed it at the first time. So otherwise I could write directly something else and write totally imaginary things. In my first novel, for example, it's set in a city that has no name in the novel. And there are only two proper names in the whole books, two characters. So we don't know really where it is. But of course, it's Beirut, the city of Beirut. Why didn't I want to put the name? Because then I had to be realistic. And you know, if you say it's London, so the things have to be in that place. You know, or it's Beirut, then you have to have the sea on that side, the mountain on that side. And a lot of events that happened there, I've had to be on... also at the right time. And so that limits you a lot. So that's why when I get fictional, I tend to imagine the whole thing and use real cities or real places or characters, but make them my own and forget about reality.
What do you think fiction adds beyond sort of like you could write a sort of reportage or a historical book about?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Does that appeal to you in the same way, the idea of writing a purely historical?
No, it's not possible. I think there's something in the narrative. In the way of telling a story or telling stories, it's not important if it's fiction or not, but what's important is the way you tell it. And the storytelling is something even now that the historians are turning back to it, you know, to say, no, the importance is to tell stories now. And, I think that's the huge difference. At the end, if it's fiction or not, it's important to know it, but for me, it doesn't make a bit difference. I say something is true because I heard it. And if it's not, then it's not, but it's in a book that I've written novel on it. So we all know we have to be cautious about what's inside it.
But do people still get in touch with you to point out anachronisms?
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. it has to be current.
If something is...
it bothers me a lot, because you know, when you have researched it like for, I don't know, days and hours and month, and then you realize that you've made a huge mistake in it. It's just like, no, gosh, how possible? But it happened, always.
Yeah.
Yes, always.
But there's people sitting with their expertise, I guess. So they suddenly hear that there's a novel about something they've...
No, it's small. No. That's not the problem. It's always like very small things. Botanics. For example, a plant or a tree you've seen all your life, all around the Mediterranean, suddenly you discover through a reader that it was an Australian tree brought out by the British in the 17th century, the 18th century, you say...
Yeah, there's no comeback to that, is there?
So, you know, things like that, very, very small items that you took for granted.
Yeah, I mean, the level of research required to avoid that particular sort of pitfall is wow. Yeah.
And how important is it to you, the reader's sort of interpretation? Do you, when you finish the book, is it a kind of a personal... effort for your own satisfaction to complete it as you see fit, and a reader's interpretations aside from small?
No, reader's interpretation are really important, and it's part of the fun. It's also when you, because I, otherwise writing would just be something very selfish and annoying, but it's also about communicating something, you know? And you're in a relationship with the reader afterwards.
And are you trying to communicate that initial image? And when you say the initial image that you started with, is that...
I know, because the book's there. So, yes, of course. Well, in the process of writing, you always want your book to correspond to this initial image you had. But then when it's there, you know, he has his life and what you see, the reflection in the eyes of the reader, which is also important. And it's always very interesting to hear what the people have to say about a book. It's always a surprise.
Does that alter your next book when you has the feedback from previous books affected how you...
Of course, it affects what you... Your whole life or your whole projects, but yes, what you said, I didn't think about that. Oh, yes, I have to know more about trees and
trees.
And botanics, you know. It's...
Do you write anything else apart from novels? Do you write any sort of radio?
I have written poetry. Oh, so-called poetry.
So-called poetry.
Yeah, because it's in verses, not very poetical. It's quite prosaic, but...
Uh-huh. And do you have is it a distinct place within your head when you sit down to write poetry or prose?
Yes.
Is that a different process?
Yes, it's really a different process. It's totally different. I don't plan a poetry book. You know, it comes from fragments you gathered through the years, and then you try to make them into something. So it's a completely different process.
I thought that the poems could be sort of gestating over a period of years.
Yes, they do actually.
Write down, write it in one go.
No, you have I have published already one book of poetry, and there's another one to appear next year. And the first one is the first, I don't know, 10 or 15 years maybe, and the next one is 5-7 years or so. So it's totally a different process. It's not linked, you know, and it's not in a novel there's really a project that lasts, I don't know, 2 years maybe, or 3 or 4 or 5, and you're inside this novel. On the contrary, in with that poetry book, it's like there's something that happens once in a while, and then you gather them and make a book.
And have you written poetry for as long as you've written novels, or were you writing novels and then you just kind of concurrently?
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh. What was your sort of start in writing? Have you written since a child?
Yes, I have. I have written since a child. And then after, I've written short stories when I was a teenager. And then I started to write academical things like dissertations and articles and presentations for congresses and things like that. That was very boring, very long.
What sort of subject was that, and what did you sort of study?
My subjects were Arabic and Persian poetry.
Okay.
In the 20th century. Did you feel cool at that time to sort of add fiction as you were writing?
Yes. In fact, I remember I invented a few articles, like it was a kind of fiction with the invented poets and my own verses in it. But at the end, I think I felt the academy was in a kind of cage for me, so I wanted to have the freedom to write other things in different ways. So I just quit and began to write fiction.
And from the moment you quit, did you sort of see it as a sort of career move, or was it?
No, I said I quit. I stayed in the university for 10 more years, but I quit writing academical things. I kept on teaching, but I knew that my writing would be novels, fiction, poetry, but not scientific stuff anymore.
Mm-hmm. And you speak a lot of languages. Do you write your novels and sort of extended fiction only in French, or do you?
Yes, I write. When it's about fiction and books, I only write in French. Mm-hmm. I wrote for the newspapers and journals, reviews, and magazines in Spanish or in Arabic, but mainly in.
And your note-taking, is that in French as well, always, or
do you, yes, yes, yes. Yeah.
Can you imagine writing fiction in another language?
No, in fact, I am very, very admirative of the people who switched language, like Conrad or Nabokov, or those people. It's incredible, you see. I couldn't do that. Or maybe I'm lazy, and I could, but it would be like so much work just to, you know, it's you have the feeling that suddenly you're blind when you change language in writing. It's like you have to learn everything from new and from the start. So it's a huge effort, even if you're familiar with the language, writing something else.
And how do you work with translations of your work, if into languages that you're familiar with? Do you have a close relationship with translators?
Yes, with some. I have a very close relationship with Charlotte Mandel, for example, my English translator. We are very close with my Spanish or German translator too. So it's a question of trust. And I know they're brilliant translators, great people, and I rely on them very much. I have to, so they know better than me.
Involved quite
no, like just if they ask me, I answer gladly, but I trust them totally. They do what they want.
Mm-hmm. And do you go back and then read in full the whole translation?
Usually no. If they ask me, I do it, but if not, no.
Mm-hmm. And do you, when with the sort of editing, when you're writing in French, how closely do you work with editors now? Do you tend to share work with them as you're going along, or
not necessarily? That depends. No, not really. No, usually it's when the book is finished and they read it and we discuss it. Basically, with my publisher or editor, it's he talks about the book for what he has seen in it for about an hour. And I listen and take notes at times, and he tries to focus on what is not yet in the book, but what could be. And at times he has brilliant ideas, at times just crap. And we get along very well. It's,
and is that a long-standing relationship?
Yes, for 15 years we've been working together, so quite...
Is that a first draft? So you've sort of just...
Yes.
You've not looked back and edited...
No, not yet. No. It's the first version. Yeah. He always sees the first version, then I work on it, and he works on it on his side too. And then we discuss it together. But usually there are no... We agree. Usually we agree on the final version very easily.
Yeah. There's one question, going back to the process of writing it. You said you start at the end. Do you then work backwards from the end, or do you pick
different parts? No. I read the end like a scope, something you have to reach, you know? But I read from the start. I read the end and the chapter one. Yes. Yes.
Now, page two, page three.
Yes. Okay. At times there's a chapter that you say, oh no, I would rather write this first and then go back to where I was. But usually, no, it's straightforward.
I guess with a detailed plan. I mean, yes. You kind of know what's going to be in each section.
And do you go through some multiple drafts, or do you polish it up for the first draft and then tinker with it?
Okay. Yes, you know, but it's something on the move, you know, like you always go back and go forward. It means like I always correct the drafts constantly, because in the afternoon, in the morning, I write, let's say, I write forward, but in the afternoon you write backwards, and you reread what you have written. And at times, you know, when you realize at the end of the day that you've erased so many pages that you've gone backwards. Mm-hmm. That happens a lot too. It's really related to the point you are, but at times it's only about reading, proofreading, correcting drafts, and having the new version.
And with the kind of image that you have, the beacon that you're aiming mm-hmm. towards, have you ever got to a point midway through and decided that actually that's not really where you're aiming? Or do you feel you always are guided by that initial?
Yes. Or if you, maybe that's that point, this kind of lighthouse can also change a bit. You know, the place can move too. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Time you change the scope of your work for many reasons, but it doesn't matter, because at the end that you're the master of it.
I just think it's good to be able to look at that in a quite sort of open and optimistic way and think, oh, that's a good guiding light, rather than, I think, as somebody who's slightly pessimistic, to think, oh, it will never be as perfect. So it's about a case of getting as close as you can and then settling and going, wow.
Of course, of course, of course. No, at times you're disappointed with yourself, you know. They say, well, that's bullshit. I'd rather write this again. That happens.
And are you able to talk at all about what you're working on at the moment? Where are you within the project?
I am about to begin to finish a novel. That means that in a few months, maybe God's willing, in 10 months I'll be over. Regular novel.
And you were saying that you have quite a few projects on the go at the moment. Yes, are you also researching something?
Yes, I'm researching something about... I want to write a non-fiction essay, literary non-fiction thing, about the borders and frontiers inside Europe. And that's a very interesting subject.
So the changing borders of Europe, I think, is particularly a very apt subject, I think, across the continent.
Yes, it's very interesting because what interested me is how these borders have also a reflection in fiction or in literature and how they've been treated, you know, in books and how they appear to us and how they were before old front lines. And now they're international borders, for example, or internal borders that maybe mean something or not. So it's very interesting and it's an endless subject. I think you could write thousands of pages about this. So it's really cool.
We treat them as very sort of unmovable things now. Well, I think that's the kind of political momentum behind that. And yet even
from- but it's not. Think about what would have been if Scotland was independent, for example. Now, you know, it was close to happen. It could have happened, let's say. So you would have an international border now in the north of England. What would that mean? What would people think about that or not? What the story of this line, where does it pass, go? Would you have like mines or land mines in the between the two countries or not? Or, you know, there are many ways of making a border real. Does it exist in the language, for example? And is it the same or not? Has it moved? It's very interesting.
Yeah, I think it's interesting speaking about fiction. It is almost nothing more fictitious than a border.
It's not there.
It's a purely... fictitious
social
construct, but at the same time, it drives wars, it drives so much human emotion. As does fiction.
It's a kind of normative fiction, very interesting.
Well, that was episode 21. Thank you to Matthias and R, and thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please rate us or like us or retweet us wherever you find this podcast. You can find more at unsoundmethods.co.uk or on Twitter at unsoundmethods.
You can find out about my writing at jamiebatchin.com, on Twitter at jamiebatchin or on Instagram at jamie_batchin.
And you can find me and my writing at lachlanbloom.com or on Twitter at lachlanbloom.
Thanks for joining us and talk to you next time.